the Joshua Tree, to all intents and purposes, is a record based thematically in America. There are some songs that could really be from anywhere, where the streets have no name, could be a European situation as well as an American one. But a lot of the material, a lot of the songs, like God's Country, mm-hmm. Exit, Bullet the Blue Sky, these songs that are based in America, are as a result of touring here, meeting musicians that are really tuned into American folk and R&B music, the original, the kind of roots music of this country, and just becoming so fascinated with the culture, the very paradoxes of this place, has led us to start investigating the original music, mm-hmm. the seminal influences of music here. These are all things that have been as a result of becoming saturated with America and American culture and American music over the last 12 months.
Well, you know, U2 is joining a grand tradition of English musicians, British musicians,
including
Ireland, of coming over to America and going and looking for the original music, the roots. Mm. You're sure. Following in some good footsteps.
Yeah, some good footsteps. I mean, as when we started off as a group, the last thing we wanted to do was sound like anybody else. And in fact, we rejected rock and roll music in the old sense, you know, 12-bar blues format. We really rejected it because so many bands back on Baggot Street in the Strip in Dublin would play this music into the ground, you know, it was just dead. Mm. So with U2, we wanted to develop an original sound and wanted to bring a new point of view to rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done that. And so now we are in a position where we can open ourselves up to outside influences in a way that would not have been so good for us early on. But it's not, I don't think we want to be overcome by these influences. Mm-hmm. We want to learn from the spirit of it rather than the form of it, you know. Just, there's a great spirit in those blues, man. And as a writer, I'm there's a poetic spirit at the heart of Robert Johnson. Mm-hmm. There's something, you know, to see. I mean, blues coming down like a hail, blues coming down like a hail. These are words that I would write. Also, a lot of the poetry that's inspired me over the last few years has been a lot of black poetry, people like Robert Hayden, mm-hmm. American Indian poetry. America has a rich literary tradition that I've found an inspiration. I've gotten really fed up with the highbrow European writers. They just bore me to death. You know, they're highfalutin. And I much prefer that. I think American writing, like Irish writing, is has a more generous spirit at the heart of it, and it's a lot more folk. You know, and when I read of Woody Guthrie and This Land Is Your Land, these are good songs written, and that's why we're playing People Get Ready in the set now, because right. This is a great American song, just so simple, but it says people get ready. There's a train a-coming, picking up passengers coast to coast. Mm-hmm. Faith is the key to open the doors and borders. Don't need no ticket, just get on board. Right. Well, that line, to me as an Irishman, faith is the key to open the doors and the borders, I mean, says it all. Who wrote it? Curtis Mayfield, I think.
Curtis Mayfield and The Impressions.
Yeah. I mean, it was written 20 years ago, but, I mean, it still speaks. I think in U2, I think the Joshua Tree, in a way, is almost old-fashioned in that it's like an old Beatles album, a collection of songs, and you know, some songs are experimental and almost orchestrated, like One Tree Hill, mm-hmm. and others are just clear-cut, you know, just little gems like God's Country. You know?
Why'd you go back to Windmill? I know the last one was a grand experiment in Slane Castle, but you could record anywhere you'd like.
Yeah, I think that the whole business of recording has got to be rethought. I think the idea of our recording session is a good thing as well. And there's not enough of it nowadays. You know, you just put a band in a studio and they just play.
Mm-hmm.
And you just put down what the band has played on tape, live vocals, no overdubs. I think that's great. You know, a lot of those Bob Dylan records, yeah. One of the reasons they sound so fresh is because of the way they were recorded. It was with this approach in mind that we went into the recording of the Joshua Tree. Even though that approach did not succeed on all tracks. A lot of the songs, the backing tracks, were just live, done in a studio or done in Adam's house, in his living room. You know, you're intimidated by the process of recording when you start out. I remember I used to go home when I was living, when we started making Boy, I was 19 or 20 or something, and I was still living at home with my father. It was just the two of us. And I would come home 3-4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'd be sneaking up the stairs, kind of. Didn't want to wake him up because he'd be in a bad mood. And he'd wake up and he'd say, "What are you doing? You know, what time is it?" I'd say, "It's 1. And he'd say, "How long have you been working on that record?" And I'd say, "A week." And he'd say, "And how long is the record?" I said, 40 minutes. He'd say, "Jeez, have you not got it right yet? Have you not got it right yet?" And I used to laugh at that. You know, I kind of laughed at it. You know, I said, "The old man, he doesn't understand, you know, what it's like, you know, in a recording studio." Now I think he's right, you know. But back then I was kind of, you know, chuckled to myself as I, mm-hmm. you know, as I closed the bedroom door. And
He has a point,
you know. In fact, it's something Steve Lillywhite used to say to us, you know, when we would be tearing our hair out, like on October or something. He'd say, "It's only 40 minutes long," you know.
Yeah.
So as we've grown older a bit, we've learned not to be intimidated by the process of recording. And we've seen through it as well. A lot of it's just bullshit. You know, this idea, you know, you walk into a recording studio and it's all this plate glass and technology and red lights. It's all there to dazzle you. It's just there to dazzle you so you don't really see that what it's really about is that moment when, you know, Ed just hits a chord that way or Larry backs up on the beat. That's what it's about. But the recording studio doesn't want you to think that. It wants you to think that it's about, you know, their way of thinking. Because they make a living through you know thinking along their lines. Forget it. You know, think back to your great records. Think back to, there probably a lot of them were recorded in the 60s on four track.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Modern production is all about control, and really our sessions when they're most successful are totally out of control.
You know, a lot of this is what John Lennon went through after all those years of doing the Beatles records and them getting more and more complex. Finally getting to you know, Let It Be and saying, "Let's just put the band in this big rehearsal studio and just play."
You see, records haven't gotten any better, have they? I mean, they're supposed to sound better, you know, and you have this CD thing now and you've got, you know, digital recording, but the records themselves haven't gotten any better. And that's because there's no point in hearing a bad record clearly, you know, it doesn't make any difference. I'd rather hear a good record, you know, through crackles and scratches than hear a bad record on CD. And the reason why we have so many bad records in the 80s is a lot to do with the fact that people are being cut off from the music they're making.
Yeah. It's more of an assembly line.
It sure is an assembly line, and a singer or a guitar player are just a part of the process.
Yeah, production has become an important thing now, whereas production really was originally just the means at arriving at a recording. Simply that, just trying to capture what was already present between the band members. But now it's become, production is where it's at, man. You know, it's getting the right snare sound, it's capturing the right separation between instruments so that you can do your 12-inch mixes.
Yeah, I mean, this, with you too, there are two approaches we've taken, you know. One of them is this live, spontaneous thing, which is probably best the best example on the Joshua Tree would be Trip Through Your Wires, which is just what you'd call over here a hoot nanny or something. Yeah, it's just...
It certainly is.
It's a big yahoo, you know. It's just, we just kind of made it up and in the moment. And yeah, so there's that side of you two, and then there's the other side, which is we do like to experiment also. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the Beatles records and the way they were made, and they were complex records. But you would have on the same record, you'd have, say, on the White Album, you might have Helter Skelter, which is full frontal
assault.
You know, assault and GBH. And at the same time, you'd have...
Rocky Raccoon.
I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, you know, Rocky Raccoon.
Oh, Dear Prudence.
Yeah, Dear Prudence would be a bad example. And see, this is, see, rock and roll music, if it's to be inspirational, you know, it's got to be challenging. And, you know, you've got to challenge people, you know, musically speaking. You know, you've got to find new sounds on the guitar. You've got to find a new way of approaching a 4/4 beat. You know, rock and roll still needs innovation. You know, and there's a lot. There's a lot out there.
I think a lot of people have this opinion of Bono being a very together person who knows exactly what he wants, exactly where he's going. Would you hold to that view?
Well,
see, maybe in a song, when you read, when you read Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, you'd say, well, perhaps not.
Yeah, well, God, wow. I mean, I'm not at all like that. I mean, I'm not at all like that. I find it amusing, actually, that people think that I'm together. I'm the most untogether person I know. I mean, in the band, they just, you know, it's just, they just say, "Here comes chaos." But I want to be together. I want to be together. And it's my ambition to one day get my own life in, you know, in order, and you know, tie it up in string, and be as organized as, say, somebody like Adam.
Adam's organized?
Oh, Clayton's unbelievable. He's Field Marshal Clayton. You know what I mean? It's like, he's incredible. For a guy who can stay out all night, you know, if he has to be up at 8 o'clock, if he has to be up, he'd be there 8 o'clock on the button, you know. Music's the one thing that I really look after. I don't look after myself as much as I look after the songs I write. As a result, personal relationships suffer, your friendship, your family, whatever. But I'm not untogether about you two. I might be untogether as a person, but not as far as you two is concerned, because I care about you two. I really, and without it, I don't, you know, I don't know where I'd be as a person. You know, I think I make a pretty shit bank manager. You know, or. You know, I worked as a petrol pump attendant once, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, can you imagine me as a petrol pump attendant? It was pretty bad, you know, because I took the job because I could write words while the cars weren't coming in. And then they had this oil strike, you know, and there was queues of cars. And I just had to stand there at the pumps, you know, filling, you know, putting gas into people's cars. You call it gas, you call it petrol. I'm very grateful to be in U2 and... very grateful to be in it, so I care about it, and therefore I look after it.
You know, a couple lyrics that I really like are Red Hill Mining Town. Say, we scorch the earth, set fire to the sky, stoop so low to reach so high.
Yeah, Red Hill Mining Town is about the British coal miner strike.
But it's also about something going on inside there.
Yeah, it's a lot more than that. Yeah, it's just about the breakdown of all the. A relationship under the pressure of being out of work, being unemployed, because you know that's what you don't read about in the papers. That's what you don't see on the news reports. Is you know the guys picking up Social Security. They got to go home to families. You know, they got to go home to their wives. They got to sleep. They're sleeping with their wives. They're trying to bring up their kids. and the pressure of the miners' strike was breaking up families. You know, it was literally breaking up, and I was more interested in that element than the politics of it, which I'm also interested in, but not as much. We sort of began again, really, with The Unforgettable Fire. We broke up the band after Under Blood Red Sky and formed it again with the same members. Mm-hmm. And, you know, started off. Everyone wanted us to be the new Who, you know, the new rock and roll group. And we said, yeah, sure, we don't mind being... I mean, I take that as a compliment, you know, the Who have been a real influence on you too. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to be a straightforward rock and roll group at that point in time. We wanted something else, and we had to find our own way. And so we went off the beaten track with The Unforgettable Fire, and then again with The Joshua Tree. And, you know, maybe one day, you know, I don't know where this is all going to lead us, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun kind of finding your way, you know, when it's kind of uncharted territory. And Edge is a very inventive guitar player. As a group, we're committed to that, and I'm glad we've stuck by that over the years. And it might mean you sell, you know, less records because you're not doing what people want you to do. You're doing what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But you know, what difference does it make really to us? I mean, we've been blessed with success, with no worries about you know where the next dollar is going to come from. We're well looked after, and so therefore we can do what we want to do. What a great position to be in. Mm-hmm. And I think the only commitment we must make is to continue to do that.
The Joshua Tree interview was conducted by Carter Allen. Special thanks to Oedipus and Lisa Traxler from WBCN, Ellen Darris, Paul McGinnis, Karen Kaplan, and the entire U2 team, Kathy Kenyon, Andy Allen, and Bob Catania with Island Records. And of course, thank you to the band and all the U2 fans who have made each concert a memorable one. This is Carter Allen. Thanks for listening.